Welcome back to Messy in the Middle. Joining me this week, I have Sarah Jane Burt. Sarah is a copywriter and content strategist helping you sell your shit without making people feel like shit. And I don't think I can like top that sentence in her intro, so I'll turn it over to her. Sarah, welcome to the show.
Thank you for having me.
Yes, I was just saying before we went live that I basically like wish I could record all of our conversations. So this will be fun to actually like have one that we can share. But let's just start out with like letting everyone get to know you a little bit better. Why don't you tell us how you got into copywriting? Was this something you always wanted to do? Kind of like what's the highlight reel? Tell us your story.
Yeah, so I got into copywriting. I met a guy at a party when I was in grad school. I went to grad school for English. And I met this guy at a party on what they called the barrel farm, because it was this guy's house, this guy Dave. Him and his dad sell barrels, used barrels for like fruit juice and stuff. So they call it the barrel farm because there's barrels everywhere. It's like out in the middle of nowhere. So I meet this guy, Paul. And he has an IT business, but they deal with a lot of local businesses. And so they also do some website design for local businesses, although that was not their, you know, main, offer. So he says to me, I have some clients that need some website copy, and you're an English major, so you could probably write website copy, right? And I was like, I've never done it before, but I'm poor. So yeah, I'll do it. And that is how I learned how to write website copy, but also how I got into copywriting. So I was in grad school for English. For undergrad, I went for English, and I was a double major in business, but I dropped it because all the classes were group projects. No one ever did the project, and I was like, I have to read like 17 books. I'm not here for this. So, right. Business had always been something I was interested in, but not necessarily, I didn't know where it was going to go. So I figured I'd teach after grad school, and I did for a while, but, never full time. So my first job out of grad school was at a marketing agency. Writing content. I was their like primary content writer. So I wrote all their content. That's where I learned a lot of what I know. That was what, 2013. And I had started writing copy in 2011 doing the freelance thing. So between freelance and that agency job, I learned a lot of like the basics. After that, I worked for a bunch of different companies and a bunch of different, positions. They were all content marketing. I actually never had a copywriter, was never my title at any of the jobs. That first job, I was a content writer. But after that, it was like content strategist, content marketing manager. So I never actually had a copywriting, title, which is funny to me because that's a, you know, majority of what I did. But yeah, I wrote for tech brands, a lot of tech brands. I don't know how I got into that niche, but I'm glad I did because it pays. Yeah. it can be boring, but it pays. And then in 2020, I was working for a SaaS company. I had left IBM because I thought this is, you know, IBM was great. They treated me great. I learned a lot. I got to work with a lot of like really talented, smart people, but it was so boring. They'd give me like 2 weeks to write an email, and I can write an email in like 20 minutes. So I was just bored a lot. So I thought, okay, I'll go to this SaaS company. It's got like, they had been around 10 years. They weren't a startup, but it's got like a startup feel. I'll be busy all the time. And then I got fired. The first time I ever got fired, was with this company. And it was July 2020, so my chances of getting another job were very slim. So I just went full-time in my business. So I had had my business since 2011, just doing, it had always been a side gig. And then in 2020, I went full-time. And yeah, it's been a wild ride ever since.
So many questions. First, I have to say, I feel you on the business major thing. I was a business major for a little bit, and I think that like the only thing more insufferable than like being a business major is having to deal with other business majors. I hated it so much. But then yeah, like wound up in business still the same way. And I also feel like that's such a common thing for people who are working in copywriting positions to like not actually have copywriter as a title and then be like moonlighting as a copywriter on the side. I feel like anytime I ever thought about getting a full-time job or like going to the corporate space, it was like I still feel like I'm gonna be doing the freelancing stuff on the side. So if I can't, you know, have peace and turn off when I'm not at work, I might as well just like not go to work in the first place. So when you got fired, excuse me if this is like an insensitive question, but like, did you get fired, or were you laid off?
I got fired. I will say I got wrong. I was wrongfully terminated, so they paid me money to not
Nice.
sue them. But actually, the reason I got fired is so I had, like I said, always had a business, always had a side gig. And this particular SaaS company I was working with is a company that connects businesses with freelance writers. So I was thinking, oh, I'm gonna like change the industry, whatever. That's why I was excited. It ended up being the worst job I've ever had in my entire life. I won't say the name of the company, but you could feasibly Google some things and figure it out. And so I had always had that side gig, and in my contract it said you cannot freelance during business hours. And I did it. The job was so time consuming. I was working sometimes 50 hours a week. There was no room to freelance on my business hours. I still had some clients. I had a couple clients that I had had for years. But I would just do the work on the weekends, or it wasn't a lot of work. It was just a little thing here or there. And then I started creating templates, and I was like, I'm gonna create this copywriting template shop. So I start talking about it on LinkedIn, and someone from my work told my boss that I was starting an illegal business or something. Has nothing to do with what the company does. It wasn't like competing or anything. But the guy calls me up and he's like, so we got to talk about your transition out of the position. And I was like, well, what do you mean? And he's like, we have a business now, and I've run a lot of businesses. I'm a serial entrepreneur. This guy was like full of himself. He's like, and so I know that you're not going to have time for this job with your business. So
Oh my
let's talk
God.
about, yeah. He's like, so let's talk about how to transition you out. And I'm sitting here like, bro, I have had a business forever. No one has ever cared. And it's like, it wasn't even an issue of if I was doing things on the clock, because this particular psycho company had this thing that recorded my computer screen.
Oh
Whenever
my
I was
God.
on the clock, I had to hit, I'm here or whatever. And I had to pause it to go to the bathroom. Like, I
Oh
couldn't
my
even
God.
pee on the clock. Yeah, because you had to move your mouse every like 10 seconds or whatever. And it would take these pictures every like 5 seconds. So I was like, the contract says this. You can literally go look at all those thousands of pictures you've taken of my computer screen to see that I am 100% always doing work for you. And I was just like, I didn't ask to leave. That was not the plan. This is like very much a side business of passive products that are already created. I'm not even gonna have time creating them because they're already created.
Right.
And so he's like, well, I just know, I'll give you plenty of free advice about running a business. And he's going on and on. And then he had the audacity to be like, we might still need you to freelance if you want to freelance with us afterwards, and hopefully you'll give us a good deal, because we have a past or whatever. And I'm just sitting here like, you just fired me and now you're asking for a discount So then oh my I go, God. Yeah. So I go, at the time, my sister was dating an unemployment attorney in a different state, but I talked to him because I was like, I might need unemployment if I don't find something or my clients don't work out, you know? So he was like, you cannot leave until you have to work for them as long as they will employ you. So even though I had gotten fired and didn't get a final day, there was no like, this is your last day. I had to stay there if I wanted to get unemployment. So I just straight up called the guy and I was like, look, y'all have wrongfully terminated me. I have contacted a lawyer and he said I have to wait until you ask, you know, and I have to work here as long as you'll give me employment if I want unemployment. And then he's like, let me call you back. So he calls me back. I guess I spooked him by saying I talked to a lawyer, even though it's like my sister's boyfriend who like worked for the state or something. Mm-hmm. And then he was like, okay. Oh, also before that, I was like, I have never in my life heard of someone getting fired and then being asked to stay on for an indeterminate amount of time. I'm like, how do you think
right.
my performance is going to be in these weeks leading up to my inevitable, you know, the guy was an idiot. So finally they let me go. They said, hey, you can't sue us if we pay you this severance. So I got paid severance. I was able to get unemployment for a little while, which kind of, you know, helped until I was able to get more clients. But just the weirdest experience, the worst. The job was shit anyways. I didn't actually want it anymore, but it was like the pandemic. I'm going to keep the job until I find another one. So it was, you know, a blessing in disguise, but, yeah, that's how I became a full-time business owner. I got fired.
That's such an insane story. And I'm so glad I asked the follow-up question because like, wow.
I know. And whenever, you know, people will ask like, oh, when did you decide to do business full-time, whatever? And I'm like, I do not recommend that you do what I did, which was get fired. In the middle of a pandemic.
That is like kind of part of what happened when I like started going to working for myself full time was I was working two part-time jobs. One of them was like a W-2 and one of them was a contract job. But I thought the contract job was doing really well and I hated the W-2 job. And so I left the W-2 job thinking like, okay, now that I have more time, I can like get more hours at the other job. And then like, the day after I told the other job, like, just so you know, like, I have more availability now, they fired me for a mistake that I made, like, 6 months earlier. Like, I think they were just, like, looking for a reason to let me go. But, like, I was a contractor. They could have let me go whenever they wanted.
Exactly.
Like, it was so bizarre. And then I was like, oh, well, I went from, like, barely making enough money but, like, ready to do this because I had, like, this one stream of income to, like, oh shit, I have to figure this out immediately. And like the thing that I got fired for, I will never forget because it's the dumbest thing, is I like had to put stickers on notebooks and some of them were crooked.
Oh my gosh.
And like, that was the reason they cited for firing me, was like poor attention to detail.
Oh my and, like, gosh.
Yeah, I have poor attention to detail. I could have told you that. But, like, such a wild reason for something like that to happen. Because, like, that's not in the job description of a marketing assistant, I don't think. But whatever.
No.
That's wild. Okay, so now it's 2020. You have your own business. You're doing it full time. I know you went through the process of, like, scaling up and doing the agency thing and then scaling back down. And you've got the templates. So, like, talk to me about the Sarah Jane Burt content ecosystem. Like, when did you decide you wanted to bring on a team? Was that always your vision? And then how do the templates come into play? Because I don't think I realized you had the templates as long as you have.
Oh, yeah. Well, the thing is, they sat in my Google Drive for like, I think they didn't go live until this year. So they sat in my Google Drive for 3 years. You know, the The gas
had to marinate.
The gas was let out after I got fired for it, you know. So yeah, so you know, they sat there, they aged to perfection. But yeah, so I had worked for a lot of agencies, mostly in my freelance work. I had done white label work for a lot of agencies, and it was shit. It was terrible. So, what's great about working with an agency usually is that you have a steady stream of work, which as a freelancer, that's, you know, gold. So you'll take less pay. You'll take more, like, having to do a lot more for the money than you would for, you know, a private client. But it's just high volume, low pay. A lot of the times you don't get feedback on stuff, or you get insane feedback on stuff that's like, what? You know, they're like overly, like, care about tiny little things that the client doesn't care about. So yeah, and so they treat you like crap. You're kind of just like disposable. You ask for more money after you've worked with someone for a year or two, and they're like, no, we'll just hire someone else for like less than what we paid you. So it's just a terrible experience. So I really wanted to create an agency that was like an anti-agency. So one where I paid my creatives well, I treated them well, I let them pick what projects they wanted to work on. They got constructive feedback. But also on the other end, the client was not charged out the ass for the stuff. So agencies will like 10x something and pay someone like 10% of what they should. So they end up making this, you know, big amount of money, and it's, the work isn't even that great. A lot of the times agencies are seen as like the innovative place to work. That's why people love to hire people from agencies, or so they say. What I really think it is that they're just trained to do a lot of work and work too many hours for very little money. But so that had always been a thought, you know, maybe I'll start an agency. I really like the idea of having this like more ethical agency, doesn't put a huge, you know, markup on the client, but is still able to pay the creative well. So yeah, sounds great, right? So I do, I do this. I had a great team, small team, just three other people besides myself, but I had a great team. They were all contractors, but what was amazing is that they all really, cared about and wanted the agency to work. And two of them actually had told me, if it comes to a point where you're able to hire us on, as in, you know, in-house, we would love that, which is like unheard of for freelancers, because a lot of them prefer to be their own boss, you know. So we had it, it went well for a while, scaled it up to you know, a lot of money. The problem was with that model, and I'm sure it can work with someone else who's like good at business. I'm not really like a finance person, you know what I mean? I should not be in charge of a business. So the like culture part was there, you know, people, they liked working for me, they wanted to keep working with me. But the finance part wasn't there. So not charging the client. I mean, the client got charged a considerable amount more than the person working on the thing. So I would pay them like 30% of whatever I charged the client. But what I didn't kind of account for is that also some of that, all that 70% is not going in my pocket. It's paying the business bills. It's paying for like marketing to get more clients. It's paying for actually two other people. So I had an editor who was not a part of that 30%, that worked on every project. And then I had like an operations person who was not accounted for in that 30%. So the writers were happy with the 30% because they didn't have to deal with the client, but the 70% was not enough to pay everyone that needed to be paid and like still have a profit. So I didn't pay myself a lot. It just, what I was doing a lot of work for nothing. You know, I ended up paying, paying for stuff out of my own very little savings I had. And so, yeah. And then this year, 2023, we had a lot of retainer clients, and a lot of 3-month retainers came up in March. And they just left because, and these were like some people I had worked with this one client for like 3 years. She was there since I went full time, and she just was like, the recession is coming and I have to save money and I think I can write my emails myself. And I'm like, okay. I had another big client that was with me for 4 years. They were with me before I went full time. And they were like, we're using AI. And the person that I worked with from that company was like a content strategist, and he's like, I don't like it. I don't want this, but this is what the company has decided, and I would like to keep my job. You know what I mean? Like, he made it clear to me that he knew it wasn't a good idea. And that was like a big corporate company, so they could probably get away with some, AI stuff, especially if he was like editing it. But yeah, so it just, I went from the best month I ever had in business revenue-wise to the one of the lowest since I had started full time. And yeah, so this year was just kind of wild, and I decided I was gonna go back to doing it solo, because I didn't like the idea, and you probably get this having your own team. I didn't like the idea of like being so back and forth with other people's money. So, one of my writers has kids, and I didn't like the idea of being like, well, I have no work for you this month, but maybe I will next. You know what I mean? And she knows that's the nature of things, but it didn't feel good. So, yeah, so I went back to solo, which is what I'm doing now. And then I've had this template shop I opened up at the beginning of this year. It's something I want to focus on more, but it's also like not the big money maker, you know? So that's been interesting trying to balance like the time I spend on that, and marketing that with the time I spend trying to get done for you clients. But yeah, at this point, I'm kind of like, I'm just gonna try everything and see what happens, because whatever I'm doing now is not working. So, or not working anymore. It worked for 3 years. I had a great 3 years in business, and now, yeah, now it's
I mean,
just.
like, who knows? Maybe you'll reach a point again and you're like, I am ready to do this again. Because that's very much like what happened with me, where I had the clients. I didn't really have the business side of the business down, but I had a really great month. I was like, yes, I can bring on help. And then I didn't even have the luxury of my clients deciding to stop working with me. They just decided to stop paying me.
Oh no.
And it was like, I had like done my retainers in a really like weird way when I first started doing them, because it was like, I understand how to charge hourly for a project, but like all of the like coaching and advice is about package pricing. But I don't know how long this is going to take, and I don't want to have to keep negotiating back and forth about, client work. So it would be like, okay, what are all the things we want to get done over the next 6 months? This is how much this is going to cost. This is how much this is going to cost. And then I would just kind of like average it. So it would be like some months we're doing a lot of work that like we're gonna get paid for in a couple months just based on like the average of the retainer or whatever. So like we didn't really have the choice to be like, oh, we're just gonna stop working until you pay us because like they already owe us like too much money. It was so dumb and I regret doing it a lot. And then when I like had to like slowly let my team go over the course of that, I was like, this is dumb. I never want to have a team again. Like it's so much responsibility, blah, blah, blah. And then in the course of like running my business on my own, I was like, well, I do miss having a team because I do really like the business side of things. Like I like thinking about the profitability and like what percentage of money goes to where and like, how much does an hour actually cost us? Like all of that stuff I think is so much fun. And like my favorite part of like getting to do it, like getting to bring on team and like think about scaling on the agency side again is that I like get to do more of the like back end business stuff. Like, I think in another world, I would be an operations person despite the lack of attention to detail I mentioned earlier. Just because like I love the like math of business. Not enough to be an accountant, not enough to stay a business major, but I love the math of business. So all that to say, like, I don't even know what my point was there, but your story is very relatable. Mm-hmm. And at least when it comes to the templates, I think like it's just so great that you have them, because I know we can talk about your experience like growing your following and your list from like bundles and stuff. I know like my one product that I have to put in bundles like isn't really related to what I do anymore. So like my options are either like spend time to create something that might fill my list with people who might buy from me eventually, or just like keep growing my list with people who like might be interested in my other stuff. Who knows? So like, despite the fact that they had to marinate for 3 years, at least like you have those templates. So I guess all of that to say, what are you doing to sell the templates? How is the template sales like side of things going? And what ways are you using them to like grow your business in other ways?
Yeah, so template sales are pretty slow, but that's mostly because I don't market them a lot. Because right now I'm really focusing on trying to get the done for you. So I just haven't been marketing them. But every time I talk about them, I sell one or two. And I also have like 20 other ones sitting in my Google Drive that I really just have to go through and like read back over, update them a little bit. A thing that would not take, it's not going to take as long as creating them from scratch, but I haven't put them up on the site yet. So, yeah, so I've been using them in bundles. I've done a few different bundles. I found one that's kind of worth the time and energy. So I'm doing that one again this year, and I got 2,000 or 3,000 subscribers from that last year. But also I have a template. So I always knew that I wanted to do a template shop. It just took forever. They were sitting on my Google Drive. It took forever to get them up. But actually my first coach ever was a digital product coach. I wanted to turn my expertise into a digital product. So that's always been in the back of my mind. So in building my audience, that's been in the back of my mind. Like, I'm not just looking for people who are at a place where they're outsourcing copy. I'm also looking for people who are at the beginning or maybe in the middle and don't, you know, can't outsource everything. So I always kept that in mind while building my audience, and the types of content I created were sometimes geared toward that template person. But my best lead magnet is my simplest one. It's like one of those things where you're like, this shouldn't have done well, but it did, so right. I'm going to keep it. So I have this content. It's a content calendar. It made in Excel, and I won't downplay it. It's pretty cool. I'm like a spreadsheet queen. So it has a thing where you like change the month and it populates all the dates. Like, it's, you know, you check off that you did something and it changes the color mm-hmm. of the thing. So like, it's pretty cool. But it's not anything profound, you know, it's literally just a place to put your content. Mm-hmm. So when I first started my YouTube channel, the first video I made was of this calendar. And the reason I made the video was because it had SEO potential, like content calendar, Google Sheets, 2022. Mm-hmm. You know, that was like the keyword. So I was like, yeah, I don't really think this is the best lead magnet to bring people to me, but sure, we'll try it out. Still gets me 1 to 2 subscribers a day, that video. It has, you know, all these comments, thank you for this, whatever. I get people emailing me like, wow, this is so great. And it's like literally the simplest thing. And I think a lot of the times we don't realize that like something that we're like, yeah, that's okay, is really cool to someone else. And sometimes the simplest things are the most helpful. But yeah, so that is technically a template that, has been bringing me subscribers every day since 2022, the beginning of 2022. And yeah, so I have plans to grow it, add a bunch more templates. Like I said, I have a bunch of them. Maybe this conversation will motivate me to actually put them up on the shop. But this year with the bundle, so last year with the bundle, I had a thing, there was like a free bag and a VIP bag that they had to pay a little bit of money for, but they got like a shit ton of stuff. And last year I put something in each of those, got a bunch of subscribers, did nothing with those subscribers other than send them like my normal emails. But this year I'm going to actually have a sequence that they go through. I'm going to have an upsell, stuff like that, so I can like try to make some money on it. But last year I was not prepared for that. But I still got, you know, I still have the subscribers. They're still very engaged. It wasn't like I lost all of them. A lot of people, when they do bundles, they're afraid of getting a bunch of subscribers and then they're not quality. They just drop off because they wanted your free thing. And yeah, some people do that just because it's overwhelming how many emails you're getting when you sign up for a bundle. But a lot of them are still there. I think if you find the right bundle, it's worth it.
Yeah, I think it's a combination of like the right bundle and then the right email frequency post bundle. Because I think for some bundles, like I'll sign up for a bunch of stuff and then just like every email I get, I delete and like don't even think about any of them. So what I've started doing when I do bundles is like I send them an email that's like, welcome, here's your thing, thanks for getting it. Like, I'll talk to you in 10 days. Like, we're just going to wait. We're going to wait this one out because I know you're about to get overwhelmed. I'm overwhelmed just thinking about it. Like, we're not even going to bother with this. But I wonder if you do, like, a bump or some type of sequence, like selling more of your offers, like on the back end, how that would perform. Because my experience doing that is diverse. And by diverse, I mean the very first bundle I ever participated in, I created a program called LinkedIn for Introverts. And so it was like a little bit more than your perfect profile, but a little bit less than like a full-blown whatever. And the upsell from that was a year access to Thought Leaders Collective for $99. And it converted so well. I had like, I don't know, like 300 people bought it, and then like 15 or something like bought the upsell. I've used that exact same thing in like four other bundles and not a single person has bought the bump. And I'm like, what happened? What's changed? Like, what's the difference? I don't understand. I've also had the same person opt into the freebie from like every bundle I've ever done.
And they, is it the same freebie or different?
Same person, same. I only have one like course that is appropriate to be like a free offer in a bundle. And there's someone who's literally done it like six times. I don't think they've ever opened it.
They probably keep showing haven't up. Opened it. They're like, they I really like up. This.
You have it, my friend.
That's funny. Yeah, I think I actually saw this. I think times are just changing because the bundle I'm in going to be in December, people were talking about, she had recommended the woman, doing the hosting the bundle had recommended not putting a membership in the bundle, because you can't take anyone's credit card unless they agree to purchase, you know, an offer bump or whatever. You can't require a credit card. So she's like, basically, there's a lot of people participate in this bundle, like get it. So like thousands of people are signing up for this. So she's like, you might not be able to handle thousands of people in your membership. If you can, think of all the admin of removing those thousands of people after their 1 or 3 months is up. And then people were commenting on this post she made, and they were saying, you know, I really don't sign up for memberships in the bundles. So I'm wondering if that also transfers to the upsell, like, just because they know it's going to be a bunch of stuff and they know they're not going to use it was basically what people were saying. But yeah, I think I have to wonder how many people actually download the thing or use it or open it. They might download it and not open it, but I definitely waited. This one's around Christmas time, so it's like people are checking out anyways. I waited a couple of weeks before I sent another email after the delivery email because it's like, and then when I sent it, people would reply to the email. It was like a, "Hi, I'm Sarah," whatever. "Oh, I love this. I don't remember what you put in the bundle, though." I'm like, yeah, I'm not surprised.
Yeah, I also like, and this is me putting my like tinfoil hat on or whatever. Like, I'm maybe tinfoil hat's not the right. Like, I just feel like I'm so cynical about digital products lately because I feel like everyone who I know has like really amazing digital products has a really hard time selling enough of them to make it like worth it. And then I see so many digital products like showing up in these bundles all the time, and I'm like, is everyone really getting that high conversions off the back end that they're actually like making a living selling all of this passive stuff? Like, I don't know. If I think about it too hard, I get annoyed and sad and confused.
And honestly, you got to think of a person that's going to do a free bundle that doesn't cost them any money. Not, and especially if they're getting 1,000 things for free, they're not, because I think there's like 300 people that participate in this bundle. So that's potentially 300 things. I wouldn't buy anything. I'd want to check out the free stuff first, and then the people who are paying for it might be inclined to buy. But yeah, I don't know. I'll let you know how this bundle goes with the upsell and the bump, what happens. But I think the problem with digital products is that it's a numbers game. So if you don't have the audience, you're not going to make money primarily off of that. I mean, that's the dream, right? Create the products and not do client work. That's my dream. But like there's this one entrepreneur who I did a course, and I actually like, you sign up for a million courses, whatever. I don't really buy courses anymore, but I purchased this course. It's called the Content OS, and I thought it was interesting, like how do I make an operating system for my content? Really loved this guy's content, his newsletter. It was $150, so I was like, okay. I bought it, I did the whole thing in two sittings, actually. There's like two parts to the course. I did a lot of it and then did the rest of it. Amazing course, well worth far more than $150. And that guy makes a lot of money on that $150 course, but then you go on Twitter and he's got like hundreds of thousands of followers, and it's just like you really got to have the numbers to make that work. And he does other stuff too, but like he makes enough off that course that I would be happy with that as my only income. And yeah, I don't really want to play the numbers game, you know?
Well, and then what I think about there, oh gosh, Roxy is participating in this conversation with us. Like what I think about when it comes to like having enough numbers to get the purchases to make the passive income worth it is like, well, then it kind of stops being passive because, like, I have no desire to do the amount of work that it takes to grow an audience that can sustain that much passive income. Like, I was thinking the other day, I was like on Threads, like just scrolling or whatever, and I was like, I have so many great Threads ideas all the time. But I'm like, is this worth taking my phone out of my pocket, opening the Threads app, typing the thought? No, it's really not. Like, and then that's it. And that's why you never see me post content anywhere because, like, it's not worth it. And, like, that's the kind of stuff that you have to do in order to, like, build one of those audiences. Like, I feel like if someone has, like, 100,000 followers on Twitter or whatever, like, they're tweeting dozens of times a day. And I don't even think I send a dozen text messages a day anymore. Like, 13-year-old me would be appalled. But I just like, I don't want to do that. Like, I started this whole like online business thing when passive income was like the hot commodity. And I was like, yes, that is what will happen to me. But even now, I'm like, no, I like just doing the work. I'll do passive marketing. Like, I don't need the passive income. I like doing work. Unless it's for me.
Yeah. I mean, I like doing work too. I wish I could write more for myself. I just don't have time. And I like doing the work, but it also burns me out really quickly. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, and yes, I could charge more or whatever. And it's like, I price in a way that feels good to me. So mm-hmm. I'm not going to charge a bajillion dollars so I can just do 2 hours of work a week. That's another thing. I'm not a person that wants a 2 hour work week, a 4 hour work week. I don't like to work on the weekends. I will if I feel like inspired to do it, but I don't work most weekends. But I like working. I want to work 30, 40 hours a week. I just feel like I don't want it to all be the same type of work that requires the same type of mental energy. Mm-hmm. So like, writing sucks up all my creative energy, and then I can't do my own marketing because I've just done everyone else's marketing. And I just don't, you know what I mean? So to me, digital products are a way to, like, I don't think I'd like it if that was my only source of income either, because that would get boring to me. It's like a supplement so that I don't have to do as much like brain draining work. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it's a numbers game, and I'm doing actual work too, you know? Like, I'm doing client work, so it's like, I don't know. And some of these people, I'm like, they might have had a rich daddy that paid for them to, like, get started, you know what I mean? To have the luxury. Sure. To have the luxury to build an audience like that without... And maybe, I don't know this guy's story, but some people probably just, like, put in 60 hours a week. I can't do that. But, yeah, to have the luxury to build the audience in the first place, a lot of these, like, guru-type people, marketing gurus, I think they definitely had a leg up, and they don't talk about, that's not part of their secret to growing your business. Like, have a rich daddy, and it might...
Well, it's just like everyone's success story when they have that truly like remarkable standout feature is like such a unique result of their circumstances. But you can't teach someone how to have your circumstances. So you just like don't talk about it. Mm-hmm. Like it's not fun to be like, I can teach you how to become like the king or queen of Pinterest. I know because I was a Pinterest like beta tester. And so I was one of the first people on the platform. And that means I know the most about it. Like, no, it means that you were creating content when there like wasn't competition. Like, it's not the same.
Yeah, that's a really good point that I don't think about. Some people are just early adopters to these platforms. So it's like, I wish I started TikTok when it came out. Now it's too overwhelming to start. And the same with Twitter. Like I've had a Twitter or an X, whatever you want to call it, since, I don't know, 2016 or something, but never really used it. And I have friends that make a lot of money on Twitter. I follow a lot of people that make a lot of money on Twitter, but it's just like they've already built that audience. To build it now is a completely different set of circumstances. You know what I mean? So,
Like, I want to meet someone who wasn't famous, had no audience, and popped off on Twitter within the last 9 months.
Yeah.
That's the person who I, if you're listening to this show and that's you, Twitter, X, Threads, but it doesn't count if you didn't have a Threads following. You couldn't have had an Instagram following either. Like, I want someone who's truly starting from scratch, does not have rich parents, and just like popped off out of nowhere. Please send an email to Haley@theprodigy.com. I'd love to have you on the show.
But that's like, I was just going to say that, like, it bugs me because you have these people that are like, well, I started TikTok. I'm thinking of one person in particular who is like, I started TikTok and I grew it from zero to whatever. But like, but she had a bajillion followers on every other platform. So you're not really starting from scratch when you can tell people to follow you on TikTok. They watch and engage, which means more people see it, and now you're making a bajillion dollars on TikTok. Well, What you didn't say is that you had an audience elsewhere that
Right.
helped you build that audience on TikTok.
Yeah, like, ooh, how I grew on social media in 2023. I started a YouTube channel in 2011. Like,
Yeah, I've actually
oh,
been
that's the
doing this for a
secret.
long time. That's funny.
I wanted to go back a little bit to, marketing and having the energy and having the time to create your own marketing. As someone who, a copywriter is a marketer. I'm just gonna say it. Some people don't agree, but like a copywriter is a marketer. How do you feel about marketing? Because it feels so boring to me. I hate doing it, and that's part of why I like don't market. Like it just feels too meta. Do you have that experience or do you like it?
I mean, I like it just because I'm just so into it. You know what I mean? But the thing is, it's also I was taking this course with this guy who talks about marketing, and or it's like a workshop or something, and he was like, yeah, marketers love to talk about marketing, so there's like very little space for you to like if you look at the number of newsletters that are about marketing versus the number of newsletters that are about
Anything else?
anything else, it's insane. So even if you did like it, you're coming up against this like saturated market. But then also, I don't know if you're noticing this, everyone's a marketer now. So it's like it kills me. All these people are like, I'm a fractional CMO. And I'm like, I've been doing this 12 years and I would never apply for a CMO job. Like, I know I don't have the breadth of experience because I don't do any kind of paid. I am not interested in that. And then you look and it's like, oh, they were a teacher for 10 years. Then they did their own VA business for a couple of years. And wow, now they're a fractional CMO. And I'm like,
Yeah,
what?
fractional CMO is like one of the buzzwords that's like bothers me, but I also feel really hypocritical about it. Same with ethical marketing or ethical copywriting. Like we just redid the like copy on the Propagy site, and we like have a really interesting balance between like calling ourselves an ethical marketing agency for like SEO purposes and being like, but here's what that actually means, because all these people out there talking about ethical this and ethics that while like doing some shady shit, like they're not wrong just because like of the way that like ethics are defined or whatever. And I feel like fractional CMO is the same way. Is like I kind of started seeing, not to be an asshole, but like people who I'm better than calling themselves fractional CMOs, and I'm like, well, I guess I have to do it now. If I know, like, that's
No,
a term people are searching
I
for.
feel the same
But
way.
I do know paid, I do know organic, and I do know, like, people ops and how to help hire for long-term marketing roles. So, like, when you look at what a CMO actually does, I have experience in doing a lot of those things. So, I feel like I can, like, walk the walk and talk the talk. But, like, yeah, you see everyone and their mother calling themselves a fractional whatever, and it's like, can you actually do that though? Like,
Yeah, and my whole thing is like, okay, you don't have to have a bajillion years of experience to be really good at what you do. One of the copywriters that worked for me at my agency, I would say is on the same skill level I am, has far less years. She's also self-taught, whatever. You don't have to have the experience to have the talent or the skill, but you do need to have the experience to get the strategy piece because I've worked with hundreds of brands, and in the 12 years that I've worked with hundreds of brands, the weirdest things have happened. And when that weird little thing that you're like, I can't figure this out, and then you figure it out, then you have a client 7 years later who has something a little similar that you're like, let me try this thing we did with my client 7 years ago. But you don't have that if you've been a marketer for 2 years. I don't care how good you are. Maybe you're, the best at ads and you write really great content. If you don't have experience to pull from, you're a one-trick pony. And I feel like that's what a lot of these sort of fractional CMOs, a lot of these big marketing gurus, and I would say in the online space, not in general, because a lot of the big like marketing education people have like 30 years of experience. But I think you need that experience, and it doesn't matter if it was in corporate or in your own business, but like you have to have some kind of experience to pull from to be able to say, I can lead marketing, you know, for your organization. But also, most people that are hiring these fractional CMOs don't need a CMO. They need someone else. They hire a CMO because it sounds fancy. Yep. They don't need a CMO. They need someone to just do the damn work so they can make enough money to have a business that needs a CMO. Yep. But it just like, it drives me wild because somebody asked me, they're like, have you ever thought about doing fractional CMO work? And I said, absolutely not. If I, having worked in corporate for like big companies and seeing these CMOs that have all of this experience and all of these like accolades and they went to school for 30 years and you know what I mean? It's like, no, I am not, I know I'm not on that level. I'm really good at what I do. I'm probably better at what I do than a lot of fractional CMOs, but I would never call myself that because I can't, there are certain things I can't and don't want to do, like the paid side. Mm-hmm. But I just, it pains me to see people call themselves that when they have very little marketing experience, or to see these programs, I'll teach you how to be a fractional CMO. Well, if you're not a marketer, how are they going to teach you to be a fractional CMO? It kills me.
I think to some degree, some of the like programs and things out there that I think we've actually talked about this before, either that or I'm having like insane deja vu, but like to some degree, like if you have to take a course that teaches you how to do strategy so that you can charge more for strategy, like maybe you just need to spend more time figuring out how to do strategy, because someone telling you this is how you develop a strategy doesn't actually teach you how to develop a strategy. It teaches you how to like follow that formula to create that like step by step,
which is a fine starting point, but you don't call yourself a strategist after taking a strategy class, you know?
Exactly. Like I have a master's degree in strategic marketing, and it's still and advertising, but like a year after, like it took me a long time to then be like, yes, I am a marketing strategist and I actually know enough about what I'm doing to like charge for the value of the service I provide and not just like what you could get if you hired me on an hourly basis, like as an employee or whatever. Like, you need that experience.
That's actually the same is true for me. Most of my positions in corporate, I was a content marketing manager, which like does all the things and like, you know, manages the team and all that stuff, or I was a content strategist. And it took me so long. Only recently have I been like, no, I'm not just a copywriter. Right. I'm a content strategist. And there is a big difference. You know, it adds to the work either way, but like, I don't, it just pains me because so many people are going to hire a fractional CMO, have a terrible experience, and then, you know, be less open to listening to the good advice you want to give them. Or just say, oh, marketing doesn't work for me or something. I don't know. But yeah, I just, the people that call themselves that and have so little marketing, I'm not trying to be elitist or anything, but it's like, call yourself what you are. If you're a marketing strategist, great. Do that. You don't have to be a fractional CMO. And most people don't need that anyway. So it's just fluff either way.
Or even like if you're a marketing manager, call yourself a marketing manager. Like do the doing. Now there's nothing wrong with it. Like you don't have to be a strategist to be impressive.
And honestly, it's like, a lot of the ongoing work is the management and the implementation. It's not necessarily like you could hire a strategist and check in with them periodically to tweak the strategy. But most people, that's not the first hire or the second or the third. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? That's someone you might go to a contractor to get a strategy, but you're not going to hire a full-time strategist until you have implementation. At least I don't think you should, because I have all the strategy in the world for my own business, but I
Right.
don't have the implementation piece, so I can tell you it doesn't work.
Yeah, exactly. As we come up on the end of this episode, maybe we could give like some type of positive note to end on, as we just kind of like had some doom and gloom for a little bit, as much as I enjoyed it. What is your favorite part of being a copywriter and content strategist?
My favorite part is, besides like seeing clients get actual results, because that's super cool, the actual work I would say is like the ideation piece and like experimenting with different stuff. That's the most fun, and a lot of people don't spend, they might spend time on ideation, but not necessarily the experimenting part. So, yeah, that's my favorite part.
We love an A/B test.
Yes.
And finally, where can people find you? How can people buy your templates or give you money to do other stuff?
Yeah, so my website is just my name, sarahjanebird.com. From there you can find all the other things. My social and all that stuff. It's actually Sarah Jane Bird on every channel. So there's like one other Sarah Jane Bird who's Canadian and like an anime artist or something, but I got the domain first. So
Look at you go.
yeah, so you can find me there, and then my shop is DIYcopyshop.com, and you can also find that from my website. Yeah, add me on the socials, and I promise I'm not always shit talking marketing on.
I am. That's a promise. Thank you so much for joining me today, Sarah. All of Sarah's links will be in the show notes. And thank you for listening. This has been another episode of Messy in the Middle, and we'll be back probably next week with another one. Bye.